You are listening to WPVMLP in Asheville, North Carolina. 103.7 on the dial, heard globally on WPVMFM.org and on Alexa. Just tell Alexa to play WPVM Radio.
Listen as the sound enters my inner ear and vibrates through my inner plane, my biosphere.
Part of me learning to be a better listener of others is learning to listen to myself.
When we are listened to, truly listened to, you know, you can feel when someone's deeply listening and we feel heard, we are healed in that moment.
Listen and be heard. Even if your voice shakes without knowing it, you may be saving a stranger.
Listen and be heard is, I guess, part of
why I wanted to connect with you, because as soon as you said that, it like stuck a chord in my soul.
Welcome to the Audio Garden, where we cultivate our collective wisdom, nurture creativity, and spread love. My name is Martha Senator, and this is Listen and Be Heard. Welcome back, my friends. It's so good to be here with you once again in the Audio Garden. And I have so much to offer you today. My old friend from the West Coast, Kim McMillan, playwright, and her newest play is Black Heaven. She's going to join me here in the Audio Garden in just a few minutes. We'll also hear from Tony Robles, who was at the Literature and Public Land Celebration in Flat Rock, North Carolina, and he spoke to author Joe Beverly. And we're also going to hear from our Listen and Be Heard intern, Javier Famania, talking about one of my favorite poets, Pedro Pietri. And Hernan is going to just take over the second half with an amazing live recording of Widespread Panic, playing Slipping into Darkness with his own amazing tenor solo in that live mix. And also, he spoke with Bato, who we'll tell you more about later, but he's the founder or co-founder of the Bowery Jazz Messengers. And that's a wonderful program that he actually started while in high school. Kim is not only a playwright, she's also a poet. So let's get to know her before we welcome her to the Audio Garden.
That I wrote when I was 26. And let me put it this way, it was a long time ago. I'm a soul in search of a vehicle to express. To express what? I'm not sure. I haven't made up my mind yet. Perhaps from too many lifetimes of never quite succeeding. Each lifetime, I think, at last, my big break. I'm gonna tell the world how to live, how to be. I've been hung for heresy, burned at the stake, barely missed being boiled in oil. My ideas have never been popular, but my deaths have been there with the best of them. But that's not what life is for. Oh no, not to die. Life is for living, living. The term is so elusive. I've yet to really be and feel who I am under this mask of skin, hair, eyes that don't express me, which is something wonderful. I want to say God, Goddess, whoever, whatever you are, just once. I want a straight path to my destiny. The trouble is, I've yet to find out my destiny. It's like clay, still in the formation stage.
That was Dr. Kim McMillan, poet and playwright and her most recent play is Black Heaven, which was presented at Unity of Merced in February and March of 2026. And here she comes to the Garden Gate.
I would like to welcome Dr. Kim McMillan to the Audio Garden.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure to welcome you back, as a matter of fact. Your latest play, which just had a production, which was at Unity of Merced, but the name of your play is Black Heaven.
It's the first actual production with the stage and people coming in. But some of the things that happened, Dunia was wonderful. She worked with like Lloyd Richards, who was the director of the original Broadway production of Lorraine Hansberry's A Raisin in the Sun. And she worked with August Wilson. Wow. And she was working at Yale.
Dunia Ramakova. Dunia has a last name.
Ramakova. And she was just, Dunia is like the definition of fabulous. And
what was her involvement in Black Heaven?
The involvement was, it was an independent study. I was getting my doctorate. And so I told her I wanted to write something around blackness. And I thought of this idea like it, because I was doing so much work looking at people like Amiri Baraka and people that were a part of the Black arts movement and the Asian arts movement and the Chicano arts movement. And I told her I wanted specifically to write about these people. Like, what would they talk about in heaven? A lot of them had already died or were just really doing, living quietly, or really doing probably the last type of work, which was going around and talking about their past. And so she says, go ahead. So I just started thinking, who would be able to give it to the gravitas? And I thought, okay, basically W.E.B. Du Bois has a lecture series in heaven, and he worked it out with God, and they decided that there was going to be an open talk, whatever, on blackness, and it was in heaven, and they got August Wilson to be the person discussing. And so in this grouping in heaven, we had everyone from the living who came to see the lectures in the dream world, the dead and ghosts. The ghosts were people who had not lifted the veil. God decreed that ghosts could be there, but they couldn't talk. But everyone knows that ghosts whisper. So they whispered. There was parts of it that were absurd, but there were parts that were really heart-wrenching, like Bertolt Brecht talking about being in front of McCarthy hearings and what happened to him, and the fact that as soon as he finished, he hopped a plane to East Germany, because at that point in his life, he felt like America was no longer safe. United States was no longer safe. And his last line when he said that was, much like it is now. So I put a comparison to what we're experiencing now, where a lot of people do not feel safe. And then people like Alexandre Dumas, to me, he's France's greatest writer, but you know, as a Black man, he was not buried in the Parthenon until 2002 because of President, I think you pronounce the name Chirac. And so he said, you know, wasn't I great? Didn't I deserve to be there? I included Zora Neale Hurston, and I included Alice Walker. And Zora is talking about, and then Alice Walker says, I would dream about you. I would just dream about you. And you were walking in the woods, and I would call your name, Zora, Zora. And you never turned around. And then she says to her, the night I dreamt and you turned around, I knew I would find your grave. And the biggest thing that they talked about, because honestly, I felt like I was a medium. And the biggest thing they talked about is that they didn't want to be erased. And they wanted their stories to, to be told. Another theme that came up when Robert Brunstein in, what was the year, 97? I'm not sure. When they had that kind of town hall meeting and talk between Brunstein and August Wilson, where they talked about colorblind casting. And so I grew up when, if you were not white at that time, you didn't get the roles. They found other roles for you. So I was all kinds of stuff. I'm like, oh, whatever, at least I get to be on stage. So when colorblind casting came along when I was older, I actually liked it. But looking from the viewpoint which August Wilson spoke to in my play, was he wanted to see Black theaters, more money being put into programs.
Not colorblind theater, but Black theater.
It was okay to have colorblind casting, but the thing was to develop Black writers, develop Black theaters, you know, directors, so that our voices would be heard rather than we were putting our stamp on other voices. But yet, I love being stamped by Shakespeare and a lot of the other ones. But
right. But you want a two-way street.
Yeah,
right?
It was like,
we all want a two-way
exactly.
street. You want to go there. You want to be able to come back.
Right.
You want people to visit
exactly.
you.
Exactly. You know,
right? And they can go back and we can all appreciate each other's culture.
Exactly.
Our homes,
exactly.
Whatever we have to offer.
And yeah, right? A friend of mine, Benny Ambush, yeah. who's a director, went. He was backstage with the people. And so he read the script and he said, Kim, it's like history. But he didn't mention it's also like crazy history. Like I put in David Hume. You know, from the Enlightenment period, where they, and John Locke, where they talked about, you know, the Black race as being basically so inferior. W.B. Du Bois was continually like, just about to say, I'm just about 2 minutes from your, because, and
right.
then David
right.
Hume would say, if I could take back those words, I would, because he's in heaven. He realizes that on earth, yeah, he made a few mistakes, well, a lot of mistakes with regard to race.
You gotta wonder how he got
yeah.
there.
Oh, yeah, well,
yeah.
He was embarrassed. He was in my play, but he and the critics felt that they had a right to discuss Blackness. And basically, August Wilson felt that they had no right, but God said, let all voices be able to talk. But they
to be heard.
And then it got so crazy because they had kidnapped Archangel Gabriel and basically messed with his horn, too. And so it was like, okay, W.E.B. Du Bois says, I'm going to have to channel God. So he decides to channel God, and the next thing he knows, he's a woman, and he's like, get me my blue dress. And
there's a nice
twist. And I love that when he channeled God, because he was like, in one part of it, he was funny in others, but he says, why have one of my most beautiful creations, why are they in so much pain, why are they treated this way? And it was like, because it was things I wanted to know when I was growing up in a segregated America, living in a segregated community. What was this all about? And one of the things that August Wilson talks about, and I wrote that and I loved it, is to be in a Black body is divine. To experience the things that are the treatment that Black people have historically experienced. It raises the level. If you can go through this and experience unconditional love for yourself, amazing, that you understand that to be in the Black body is a gift from God. And to experience that and is an elevation of the soul through basically the trauma of living in societies that continually tell you, particularly when I was a kid in the 60s, that you're not worth it. And so you have to decide in your mind that not only are you worth it, but you are beautiful.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kim McMillan, for joining me here in the Audio Garden today. How can people follow up and follow what you're doing? How can they get in touch with you if you want them to?
Yeah. I'm a bit of a recluse. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram.
What's your handle?
My name, Kim McMillan. And I'm on Blue Sky. I'm an art house flower on Blue Sky. I don't necessarily click on everyone who wants to friend me, but my stuff is open so people can look at it.
They can follow you and see what's going on.
Yeah. You know, I'm just kind of a quiet at home writer who talks to herself. So that's why.
And writes a play called Black Heaven. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience that I haven't asked you about?
Well, I just want to say I've known Martha for probably about 30 or 40 years. This is one woman who's made a difference in the lives of so many. She has really promoted artists, writers, poets, and done so much that is just beautiful. And I thank you for that. Thank you, Martha.
Well, thank you for that, Kim. I appreciate you and our friendship. And I thank you for joining me here in the Audio Garden today.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Listen and Be Heard Radio for readers and writers in Flat Rock, North Carolina, for the Public Lands and Literary Festival at Tresca's at Highland Lake Park. We're here with an author who has written a wonderful new book called In the Absence of Belief, Joel Beverly. Joel, welcome to Listen and Be Heard Radio for readers and writers.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me, man.
In the Absence of Belief, it's a memoir and manifesto from the heart of Appalachia.
I wrote the book over about a three-month period initially in 2022 as me and my partner Fern were traveling through North America, Europe, and Egypt. I just wrote, as things came up, as I had conversations with friends and people I met, it just sparked interesting things for me, and this book came out of it. The title, A Memoir and Manifesto from the Heart of Appalachia. Appalachia just came up a lot, you know, as I was talking to other folks. So it was very present for me at that time. And that's a general idea of where the book goes.
So you are born and raised in, like you said, Eastern Kentucky. And the book has the trajectory of, I guess, the East Coast of the U.S. going through Europe and to Egypt. Is that correct?
Correct.
Tell us through, you know, the lens of somebody from Appalachia, what it was you saw and what put you on that road? What put you on that journey?
Yeah, the traveling was one thing, right? So you see the world and you're always kind of measuring that world versus the world that you know.
Yeah.
And the world I know is Appalachia, you know, in a very poor part of Appalachia, you know. You know, I grew up without any running water, no plumbing, and we were hungry at times. So that is the reality that I experienced for my first 18 years. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, that's what I was measuring, everything I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. You know, and also just things happened. You know, when I was in Portugal, for instance, I was reading the news, and that's actually when J.D. Vance was running for senator. So he was really in the news. So that brought up some, from my end, just analysis of, you know, who he was, his story, mm-hmm. and kind of what he was saying. It's not a political book at all. I've moved beyond politics. I see it just as a tool of division. Mm. I do analyze some of his thoughts and think about them in a way that's a little different than what he thinks. So basically, the reality is this, that each of us have been trained by society to be who we are. You know, whether you're a shark or a minnow in this world, you've been trained to be that. So if you understand that, you have compassion for everyone, mm-hmm. you know. So you, whether it's a political ideology, whether it's a religious ideology, if you understand that each of us have just been trained to be who we are, you kind of have compassion. Mm-hmm. And in the end, that's what it is. One of J.D. Vance's main arguments is that the reason that Eastern Kentucky and Appalachia are poor is because we're just Scots, poor Scots Irish, and it's in our blood, and that's just who we are.
Yeah.
And there's no way that we're going to rise above that. Which, you know, if you dissect that just for a minute, you realize it makes no sense, right? It's, if you go to Glasgow, for instance, and you're hanging out with a generationally wealthy family in Glasgow, Scotland, they got that same Scots blood, right? But they don't have the poverty that we exist in Eastern Kentucky. So getting back to the title of the book, In the Absence of Belief, you know, I feel that we've been trained to think that we're poor. You know, the war on poverty was, some would say it was a failure, right? In Eastern Kentucky and Appalachia. But I feel it was probably a success. A success in the way that it made us think that we were poor. And it made the nation think that we were poor. And once you believe things like that, you begin to create your reality around those beliefs. So in some ways, you know, I realized through a number of interesting spiritual experiences on this trip that if you can move beyond beliefs that you've been trained on, there's a freedom on the other side of that, and a potential, an unlimited potential for each of us to move to.
Makes perfect sense. And, you know, you talked about poverty and knowing you're poor, being told that you are, just conjures up this idea, you know, there's a poverty of, there's a material poverty, and there's also a poverty of the spirit, you know. Being from, you know, Eastern Kentucky, you said that there were some differences between that part of Appalachia and this part of Appalachia here in North Carolina. Can you talk about maybe what those differences are, if they're big or maybe even if they're subtle? And then, you know, what are some misconceptions that people have about Eastern Kentucky, or misconceptions that people have?
Well, you can drink the water here.
Okay.
That's one big difference, right? Yeah, it's we get our water brought in by jugs, you know, because, you know, the mining industry impacted the water.
Right.
So it's not very good there. And also that's, you know, and that's the other big thing, right, is we had the mining industry in Eastern Kentucky and West Virginia.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to consider, right, that difference, right, to have an industry in our area for 100 years now, versus here in North Carolina, where there is not that industry, but now this area is rich and our area is poor.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Why is that? And not being able to drink the water is one of those reasons, right?
Wow.
It's, you know, today, you know, if you want some beautiful mountain air, some beautiful scenery, this West North Carolina is an amazing place to be.
Yeah,
Eastern Kentucky is too, but it's been exploited, you know, for its natural resources.
Yeah,
for so long, that's impacted, and also it's a boom and bust there, right? You know, 80 years ago, the town that I grew up in, Vico, was a booming spot, you know, two movie theaters in this tiny little coal town.
Yeah.
You know, VICO stands for Virginia Iron, Coal and Coke Company. Mm. So many of the towns there in Eastern Kentucky were named after the mining companies.
Mm.
So, but when that went away and when it started to degrade in the 60s, you know, they started strip mining rather than deep mining, a lot of the people left, right? So, that's another thing, right? Western North Carolina has never had that boom, so they never had that bust. So it's just kind of been steadily rising, potentially, right?
Joel Beverly, thank you so much for speaking with us on Listen and Be Heard Radio for Readers and Writers. In the Absence of Belief, a memoir and manifesto from the heart of Appalachia by Joel Beverly. Joel, for people that want to buy this book or they want to find out more about you, how do they do that?
The website's Joel, J-O-E-L, and then Beverly Like the Hills. So joelbeverly.com.
Once it's heard, it can't be unheard. Once it's published, it's not going to be unpublished. Once you read the poem, you can't unread it. No matter how an individual may try to push it to the side, forget about it, it's still in there. And it's
the words, the meaning, the feelings behind it are taking root in their psyche and they can't get rid of it.
I do not believe in banning books, but I'm also not a parent. As a parent, you have to look at what people are reading, what they're watching. But I wouldn't outright ban books.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour. I'm Martha Senator. We have a high school internship program happening here at Listen and Be Heard. Javier Famania is in his last semester of high school. How exciting. And I passed him a book of poetry by one of my favorite poets and a mentor of mine, Pedro Pitre. And this is his response to the book, and he picked a poem to read as well.
This is Javier Famania, and you're listening to Listen and Be Heard. Selected Poetry is a collection of poems by the Puerto Rican poet Pedro Pitre. Pitre, a poet and playwright, born in March of 1944, was one of the co-founders of the New Rican Poets Club. He was an activist and an extremely talented poet, as seen in this extraordinary collection of poems we're looking at today. The collection contains themes of what it means to be a Puerto Rican and from New York City at the same time, and we see Pietri's critique of the American dream within. He highlights major elements of New York City like baseball and hot dogs and all the things that come to mind, as well as underlying themes of activism. Let's look at one of Pedro's poems that really encapsulates New York City, Traffic Misdirector, on page 71 of the collection. This poem tells the story of Jorge Brandon, who Pietri claims to be the best living poet in New York City. It's Traffic Director by Pedro Pitre. The greatest living poet in New York City was born in Puerto Rico. His name is Jorge Brandon. He is over 70 years old. He carries his metaphor in brown shopping bags inside a steel shopping cart. He travels around on the streets of Manhattan. He recites his poetry to whoever listens. And when nobody is around, he recites it to himself. He speaks the wisdom of unforgettable palm trees, the vocabulary of coconuts that wear overcoats. The traffic lights of his poem function without boring advice from AC or DC current. Bookstores and libraries are deprived of his vibes to become familiar with this immortal poet. You have to hang out on street corners, building stoops, rooftops. First, escape bar parks, subway train stations, bodega botanicals, Iglesias pawn shop, card game, cockfights, funeral, Valencia bakery, Hunts Point Palace, pool halls, Orchard Beach. On the Lower East Side, the admission is free. His presence is poetry.
What do you think? I know you've been here for a long time. You're part of the neighborhood. What do you think when I say the words listen and be heard? That's the name of the show. So we have this tag and say listen and be heard. And then you say listen and be heard for whatever reason.
Listening to be heard, like, you know, for the people who has like the power and the things that could change the whole neighborhood. And then he will until tell them, you know, listen, this is our problem. This is what we need for the neighborhood. People have to listen, and then they have to come up with something, you know, for the neighborhood and listen to the people, not the big corporate people.
The communication.
Yeah, they saw everything.
All right. Well,
listen and be heard to your heart. Once you speak and talk to your heart, enormously beautiful things can come forth. So listen and be heard. You hear yourself. Hear your thoughts. Listen to your thoughts. And perhaps take action.
We are listening and being heard across generations. Thank you to our intern, Javier Famania, for taking the time to dip into some poetry by Pedro, just because I asked him to. And I love to hear him reading Pedro's work. It's a wonderful thing. Please stick around. Listen to the sounds of the audio garden, and we will meet you on the other side of the bridge in a minute or two.
Ramiro Rodriguez Sierra, formerly known as J. Rodriguez. What's happening? Hope you're enjoying the show. Thank you, Martha Senator and Listen to Be Heard Network for doing what they do. And please support Sound System Culture. I'm going to play a really special, great clip, Widespread Panic. I don't know if you know Widespread Panic, but they are great. And many good friends in that band. And many years ago, I had the honor and pleasure of playing with them at the Beacon Theater. That's Widespread Panic and your host, Jay Rodriguez. Hope you enjoy that track. It's a long, live, cool track. If you know anything about Widespread Panic, you know, it's an experience. Enjoy. Jay Rodriguez on saxophone, Slip Into the Darkness. Support Sound System Culture and Listen and Be Heard Network. Peace.
Ladies and gents, join us right now, Mr. Jay Rodriguez.
Farmer Bell, John Farmer Bell, rhythm guitar and vocals, and Dave Schools, David Allen Schools, bass, background vocals, and Domingo S. Ortiz, Domingo Steven Sonny Ortiz on percussion, and John Jojo Harmon on keys and background vocals, and Todd Mance on drums and percussion and background vocals as well, and George McConnell on lead guitar and background vocals, and yours truly, Jay Rodriguez, on saxophone right there, playing Slipping Into Darkness, back at the Beacon Theater with Widespread Panic. All right, don't forget to support Listen and Be Heard and Sound System Culture. Peace out.
The lyrics talk about life and all the stress that we go through. It's really unnecessary if our hearts could only see the love that is around us and that the Creator meant for us to flow back and forth between one another.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network, a project of Sound System Culture. And that was the beautiful voice of Judy Boddy joining the J. Rodriguez Quartet live at the Blue Note. You're only going to hear that stuff here on the Listen and Be Heard Hour. I'm going to lead you down the path now to a conversation in progress between Hernan and Bato Aydelote. My apologies if I'm pronouncing his last name wrong, but I'm saying it in full admiration for the things that he has set in place, even as a high schooler, that continue to flourish today. And I was actually really honored to go down and participate and share some poetry on one of these events, the Bowery Jazz Messengers. Y'all, you can go to BoweryJazzMessengers.org to learn more about the wonderful work they're doing and even contribute.
I joined the Jazz Standard Youth Orchestra.
Wow.
Right around my junior year, I was already a leader at the band. And so I already knew multiple just people within this program, as well as LaGuardia High School, that were very talented jazz musicians. Simultaneously, while this was all going on, my father was volunteering at a Christian rescue mission called the Bowery Mission, and he would bring me there. By this point, I realized, you know what, it would be an amazing opportunity to start a band here that plays right here in the Bowery Mission, that plays jazz and Afro-Latin music. So that's when I got the idea, let me turn this into a whole band that plays right here. And I hit up some of my friends from LaGuardia that I knew that were jazz musicians, and one or two other kids as well at the time from the Jazz Standard. So we began this in January of 2020. 2020, as you know, was a very, that's when it started. But during this time, you know, we weren't expecting a pandemic to break out. We started our first official performance right there in the chapel in February of 2020. I kid you.
Wow. That's right. So there was like a lot of, you're probably breaking a lot of rules. I know that I was doing some things. I remember it was tough. And you didn't want to, we didn't understand it. We didn't want to get other people sick. We didn't want to get sick.
Yeah. And it was about 2 weeks before, like, we were even hearing about the coronavirus itself. So, like, none of us were even aware this was even going to happen. You know, we had our first performance there, and, you know, I remember it like it was yesterday as well. It was such a amazing performance that we did. It was really, you know, impactful. I mean, this is, like, the only jazz band of its kind right now that I would say plays exclusively for those suffering of homelessness, you know? And so when we started, it was just amazing. But then, of course, the pandemic broke out about a month before in March, and we had to completely kind of come back to the drawing board for just a little bit and figure out what we were going to do. It turns out that we actually got a little bit creative here considering the circumstances at the time, and we kept the program alive during quarantine and lockdown and all that. And what we decided we were going to do was we were going to actually perform outside on the street right outside the Bowery Mission. During this time, they had a meal line where they had the clients, like, had to, like, get their lunch right outside. Right. They could not eat.
They couldn't, of course, yes.
So we played right outside during the meal. Everyone was eating the food. And we did this during, like, the late stages of the winter all the way through the summer up until all our seniors graduated. And we did that throughout my senior year as well.
That's really good for people to hear these stories, because I think as we get older, a lot of musicians get jaded. It was really so interesting time, very difficult. But the fact that you even did it is an amazing thing, because it was a really weird time. So for you to do that at that age is really amazing. You know, and the fact that other people and parents let you, like you guys, do it in high school, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of like ironic because, you know, despite the chaos of the time, you know, I almost now credit the pandemic, you know, like to like our rise in this organization, because that kind of gave us some spine, you can say, in our organization. We were like, you know what, we came here with a duty. We came here with a mission that music was medicine, and we're honored to be, you know, like, to serve our community, where regardless of what's going on in the world, we're here, and we're here to provide that service. And so that, you know, like, it really, like, you know, like, I give the pandemic a lot of credit for kind of teaching us that we could prevail through this thing no matter what.
Thank you to Bato and Hernan for telling us, bringing us this really inspiring information about the origins and the work of the LaGuardia High School Jazz Band, who perform ongoing, it's an ongoing thing, at the Bowery. And you can go to Bowery Jazz Messengers .org to find out more about their work and to contribute. The time goes by so quickly here in the Audio Garden. I want to thank all of our guests once again: Kim McMillan, Joel Beverly, our own intern Javier Famania, and Bato Adelote. And you will find links and to all the different organizations and books and people that we speak to on each post for each episode at listenandbeheard.net. And I'd like to remind you that when you come to us at Listen and Be Heard, it's entirely commercial free. And we appreciate it when you decide to support the work that we're doing and say that it's worth it to you. And even if you can't contribute financially, we appreciate it if you just subscribe to our email newsletter and show us that you're listening and that we're being heard, because it matters to us. We're heading into a 3-week production break, and we're going to come back with a slightly different format and approach to things. And we'll be sharing some news about that. So if you would like to find out what we're going to be up to, please visit us at listenandbeheard.net and sign up for our email newsletter. And in the meantime, we'll be sending some rewinds and maybe even a remix your way, which we hope you also appreciate.
I so appreciate each and every one of you who is a flower in the audio garden. And I'm appreciating my spring garden too. I put some rhubarb in early spring, and I'm so happy to see that it's actually coming up and leafing out along with the chokeberries and a few little leaves on the pawpaw trees that I put in, which are native to this part of the country, and make this fruit that's something between like a mango and a banana in taste. I swear, I really like it, and I hope that they'll prosper. I had to plant too. But anyway, I'll have more news for you about my garden, and I hope that you will be thriving in your garden as well until I see you again. Please just stay busy cultivating the things that make you feel good. And by extension, maybe we can make everybody feel good. Who knows? Thanks, as always, to Davian Dial at WPVM Radio in Asheville, North Carolina, for introducing Listen and Be Heard to the broadcast airwaves. KCEI in Taos, New Mexico. KEPJ in San Antonio, Texas. KHOI in Ames, Iowa. And KFOI in Red Bluff, California. And other stations that are part of the Pacifica Affiliate Network for cultivating the audio garden in your communities, and our own Listen and Be Heard Network, host of WLBH.org. Please visit us at listenandbeheard.net and sign up for our email newsletter, and at our Listen and Be Heard YouTube channel, where you will find unedited video interviews of our featured guests. My name is Martha Senator, and I want to thank you for listening and giving me the opportunity to be heard.